truth.
Only one truth.
With consequences.
And that's the truth that I know.
It's time to answer.
Dash of the Beach 2000.
Many stories, only one truth.
Brawl for all.
Looking back, definitely having second thoughts.
Hear the real story behind the scenes of wrestling's biggest moments.
David Arquette is world champion.
Publicity.
Who the hell is Vince Russo to decide what to do with his title?
Well, Vince Russo was the man hired for the job.
The Montreal Screwjob.
Only one person was on a three-way conversation between Vince McMahon, Bret, and Bret Hart, and that was me.
Vince Russo's truth.
I've been my own worst enemy.
With consequences.
People are still upset about it.
The biggest consequence of me speaking my mind and telling the truth has literally been over 25 years of abuse.
Vince Russo's truth with consequences. With Matt Kidd, coming soon to Westwood One.
The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when. Why it ended with Robbie E. and Matt Kuhn.
Hey, what up, guys? I know it's going to be weird listening to me talk now that I'm once again this huge TMZ star, because I was all over TMZ this week. But nonetheless, it's Why It Ended Wednesday. So welcome to Why It Ended. And last week, we're coming off of a great interview with, whether you want to call him Dr. Stasiak or Sean Stasiak or Planet Stasiak
or whatever
you want to call him. What's the feedback you got from last week, Matt?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the feedback is, I believe that somewhere Mr. Stasiak is still talking.
He's a great guy, but he is a that feedback. He is a talker, but I mean, it's in a good way.
It is in a good way. And, you know, and also I think we both failed to mention that, like, Dusty Rhodes and Cody Rhodes are a father-son world tag team champ combo. Like, you know, he said he wanted to be the first, but Cody is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and his father was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
Oh, wow. You are true. That is brand new that happened, so maybe he didn't know about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to stay on top of things when you're fighting crime.
Yeah, but he was also talking in the WWE, wasn't he?
I think so. Let's just say so. But let's talk about what you talked about earlier. Robbie, you got beat up by a grown-up, much older than I remember, Honey Boo Boo. What the fuck was that?
Well, you know, what you didn't see in that TMZ clip was Sugar Bear, her father, was trying to impress her. So he came to the ring for a match. I was in there with him, and I kind of, you know, beat him up a little bit, pushed him around, show him who's boss. And then, of course, he got James Storm to watch his back. It led to a match. And then Storm, the idiot cowboy that he is, dragged me over to the guardrail. And that woman, Honey Boo Boo, if that's what you want to call her, came and slapped me on the chest, which wasn't cool. And then, you know, 24 hours later, it's all over, not just America, the world. God, I turned on my TV. It's on TMZ, TMZ Sports Online, every other U.S. Weekly, every other, you know, kind of big publication picked it up.
I'm surprised you're okay, because with the amount of time it took her to wind up, I thought it must have hurt a lot.
Well, it did hurt a lot. And, you know, beyond that, it's even physically I'm a little better, but mentally I'm not. I mean, dude, I got chopped by a, like, what is she, 13-year-old girl, and her and her friends just laughed at me. And, you know, everyone saw that across the world. How would you feel?
People laugh at me all the time, Robbie.
Well, all right. That's true. Fair enough. But you know what people aren't going to be laughing at? Our guest today.
Hey, you know what, though? I'm going to get in a plug real quick first, if you don't mind. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
So I've got a new podcast coming up this Sunday, October 7th. And if you haven't heard, it all started right here. And it's with Vince Russo. And so it's called Truth with Consequences. It's on Westwood One. It's me and Vince Russo. I'm not a Vince Russo guy, so we're going to argue a lot. It's going to be a great listen. Yeah, it's going to be something, you know, just like we did on our show when Robbie was afraid to talk for 20 minutes.
Well, yeah, I mean, guys, if you love Matt on Why It Ended, you're going to love him on this. He's, you know, you are. I hate to admit this, but you are pretty much a podcasting genius. So if you guys love Wide Ended, you're going to love his new project.
Yeah, it's called Truth with Consequences with Vince Russo. And speaking of consequences, who is our special guest we have today?
A gentleman by the name of Ken Patera.
So, Robbie, we were given a warning by a mutual friend of ours who's actually become a big friend of the show, Larry, and you can find him at A Wrestling Historian on Instagram. Make sure to check it out because the guy knows his stuff. But do you remember what the warning was, Robbie? I think it kind of confused you a little bit.
No, what was it?
It was don't ask about McDonald's.
Oh, yes, now I remember. Are you going to ask, Matt?
I think I have to. I think we have to. And I think
I care about what people think about me, so I let you ask all those tough questions.
Yeah, because chances are you're going to meet Ken Patera in a rig in the next 6 months. So
yeah, exactly. You know.
And if you want to listen to us, you know, you are listening to us. Fuck. If you want to listen to more of us, we got our Patreon on point now, guys. Check it out, patreon.com/Wyatt, and it's really a way for you to support the show. You know, Robbie and I work hard on the show. You should see how hard we work getting guests and talking it through in preparation and all that stuff. So we really appreciate your support. It's just a couple dollars a month. If you want to check it out, we have lots of bonus stuff, and we just posted something new, right, Robbie?
Yeah, we just put up an interview with Ace Starling, who God, he's going to text me for saying this, but he's kind of an indie icon, and he was one of the original indie darlings, especially here in New Jersey in the Northeast area. And it's a great interview to just hear about his career and, you know, what it was like, you know, being kind of like a, you know, an enhancement talent in the mid-90s.
It's a crazy story because he was an enhancement talent in WWE, and then actually did a couple matches that made the outsiders look really good in the first days of the NWA invasion of WCW. And of course, you can only find that on our Patreon, which is located at patreon.com/whiteended. But of course, coming up now, Robbie, Ken Patera on
Why? Come
it,
on.
It.
I can't believe you did the voice. Ended.
All right.
Hey guys, so by now you know about one of our main sponsors for the show, and I know you might be a little embarrassed to talk about it, but
it's our friends over at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now, I don't know about you, Robbie, but my hands are important to me. I play guitar, and I play music, and I type a lot. And so maybe for those of you who maybe want to take care of your hands or protect your hands or save you the trouble, you can go to StopUsingYourHand.com.
And listen, bro, there's no need to be embarrassed. It's all fully private. Any order from Pleasure Products USA comes in plain packaging with nothing indicating the contents, guys.
And you know what? You know, give it a rest. Give the hand a rest. You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com. And if you go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo, enter in the coupon code FISTBUMP, and you can get a free stroker.
And remember, guys, no worries about getting found out because your credit card statement will not reflect that an adult product was purchased, so you're in the clear.
Now, StopUsingYourHand.com's premier product is called the 3V Starlet Stroker, and it's got a ton of features that you might not expect, you know, such as, you know, a real voice coming at you, or maybe a little movement in an unusual way. Where can you go? You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo. Use the coupon code FISTBUMP for your free stroker. StopUsingYourHand.com.
Hold up.
Hey, Ken. Well,
yeah.
Growing up, Ken, I know you were obviously you were a great athlete. You came from a family of great athletes. What kind of sports and stuff did you play when you were young?
I was the only real athlete in the family.
Wait a second.
The other ones were pretend. So you know, they were football players. What the hell? They used to go out, beat each other up.
Now, for those who don't know, the great Ken Patera's brothers, one played for the Baltimore Colts and became the head coach of the Seahawks, and the other one played for the San Francisco 49ers, but Ken was by far the greatest athlete.
Of course.
That's right. They know that. Yeah, but the most memorable thing that I can think of when I was growing up is one night at dinner, Mom fixed a huge pot roast. This thing had to be 5-6 pounds. And, you know, with the corn and the baked potatoes and, you know, everything. So we're sitting there. There's one potato left. It's in the bowl. Well, you know what happened? The big fight broke out over that last potato.
And who won? The pro wrestler won, right?
Well, I was only 4 years old, I think. So my big brothers, the football players, they beat the shit out of me. My mom jumped in and grabbed them both. Leave little Kenny alone! Anyway, I got half that potato. Yeah, oh, God, those were the days. But, yeah, we would, the dinner table was the most dangerous place in the house. Yeah, by far. Everything else couldn't even compare.
Now, for those who don't know, Mr. Patera here was a world-class weightlifter, was in the Olympics for weightlifting, won medals at the Pan American Games, the World Championships, was the first world's strongest man, beating legends like Bruce Wilhelm. And but we have a wrestling podcast, and I know you as someone who I watched on TV growing up. And you started in 1973 with the AWA. I think you broke in with a lot of other really great wrestlers in the camp you broke in, right?
Yeah. You want to know who they were?
Who's that?
A bunch of nobodies.
Like Ric Flair and the Iron Sheik?
Yeah, but Jesus Christ, give me a break. Rick and the Iron Sheik, Jimmy Brunzell, Jumping Jimmy Brunzell,
wow.
Greg Gagne, Vern's kid, and
Ken, how did you get approached to be a part of this wrestling camp? And like, were you a fan of wrestling, pro wrestling before it? Did you know anything about it?
Well, the whole thing was built around me. I moved from Portland, Oregon, where I grew up. I moved back here to Minneapolis in 71. And because Vern told me if he was going to sponsor me for the 72 Olympic Games, that I'd have to live here in Minnesota. And so I didn't have no problem with that. So when I got back here, there's nobody to lift with, nobody to train with, except power lifters. And I was an Olympic lifter. I mean, power lifting, a lot of people don't understand, they don't know the difference. I'll tell you real quick. Power lifting is a bench press, squat, and deadlift. In Olympic lifting, you have the military press, the two-hand snatch, and the clean and jerk. And that's the difference. It's a completely different sport. The only thing that's the same is they use the same kind of weights. And that's it.
Matt, did you know that? But, because fitness is my life, but Matt has never actually went to a gym in his whole life. So, Matt, did you know that?
I did not know that. But, I know that, some people are built for show, like you, Robbie, and some people are actually built to win competitions, like Ken Patera.
There you go.
That's true.
There you go. Now, let's get it right out there right now.
So in this camp you were in with Ric Flair, Iron Sheik, Greg Gagne, Jumping Jim Brunzell, a lot of these great wrestlers we know. I just want to ask you a question I've always been curious about. I always, as a fan, I never thought Greg Gagne was really any good. Was he someone who was good, or was he someone who was just completely living off of his dad's legacy?
He just, his dad was the promoter and the heavyweight champion at the same time. So you do what the promoter tells you to do, otherwise you're not going to be there. And his kid weighed, I don't know.
He was like 6'2", 180.
Yeah, well, he's closer to 6 feet to 170. Well, as he got older, I think he might have weighed 180, 185, but he never weighed more than 185 pounds. And he never lost to anybody under 6'6" and under 300 pounds.
Yeah.
He was an Iron Man.
They made him look like $1 million out there. And
Exactly. But
like you said, the camp was built around you because you're, you know, an Olympic athlete. You have the credibility a lot of wrestlers didn't have, save a Wahoo McDaniel. And you went in and you started feuding right away with a legend, Johnny Valentine. What was that initial feud like with Greg Valentine's father?
Well, Johnny, he was down in Carolinas, down in Charlotte for the Crockett promotion. I didn't go down there. I was up here from December 72 for Ganya, from December 72 to I think it was April of 73. Then I went to Texas for Von Erich. And then I went to Carolinas with Crockett Promotions. As a matter of fact, when I finished up at in Texas there for Von Erich, I called Rick and I asked him what was going on in the Carolinas. He said, "Oh, you got to get over here." He said, "I'll tell George Scott." I said, "I remember George. George was wrestling up here for Ganya when we all broke in." And he says, "Yeah, I'll talk to George and we'll bring you in here." And so George Scott called me a couple of days later and asked me if I'd be willing to come to Charlotte. And I said, yeah. So I wound up in Charlotte. And one of my first matches, as a matter of fact, was with Ric Flair. And put me over like $1 million.
And Ric Flair was a different wrestler then. He was much bigger, much heavier back then, right?
At that time, he had lost quite a bit of weight. I think Rick was probably still around 250, 260 maybe. I don't know. He wasn't that. He was down around 240.
And was wrestling easy for you to pick up? Like, I mean, obviously you were a great athlete, so did it come naturally to you, understanding the psychology and everything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you learn the psychology as you progress. And I picked it up real quick. And Rick picked it up real quick, too. Some of the other guys never picked it up, you know. It's not easy. It's like a pulse, you know. And you have to you learn how to get the people excited. Well, I'll tell you, that you get an arm bar on a guy. And the people are just sitting. Well, then you learn how to work that arm bar into where they're standing up and throwing shit at you.
That's it.
You know? Yeah. And so you get them sitting down, standing up, sitting down, standing up. And you keep them going. And that's the psychology involved in it. You know, but it takes a year. 2 years sometimes. It took me a couple of years. It took Flair a couple of years.
Now, a lot has been made of that training camp with Vern Gagne, the barn and all the squats. Can you give us an idea of what that exercise regimen that Vern put you through, and whether even as a world-class athlete, whether it was tough for you or the other guys were dying and you were fine?
No, fuck no. It was tough on everybody. Christ, I weighed 320 pounds. I was right out of the Olympic Games. I came right back from Germany, weighing 320. And he had Billy Robinson, Don Morocco, and jumping Joe Scarpello from Omaha came up, and like the first day they'd have us do 100 squats, and you know, 100 push-ups, and you know, 500 sit-ups, stuff like that. Then a couple days later, they'd have us do 200 squats. Well, within 2 weeks, we're doing 500 squats.
Wow.
Yeah, as a warm-up. And so it was tough.
Matt, do you think you could do...
calisthenics and whatnot, you know. At the end of the 4 or 5 hour workout, we'd go out and run for an hour.
Yeah, Matt, do you think you can do 5 squats, Matt? Do you think you can do 5?
Serious question, Robbie. What's a squat?
Come on, dude. You know what?
I can do 5 squats. It's a legendary camp. I've heard Flair talk about it. I've heard the Iron Sheik talk about it. And now we've heard you talk about it. And so many great, legendary, impactful wrestlers that really changed the landscape came out of that camp. So it's pretty amazing that was something that you were a part of and a big part of that was built around you.
Yeah. And, you know, the next year, Sergeant Slaughter started in that same camp. Jesus. And the year after that, Ricky Steamboat.
Wow.
Started in that camp. So, I mean, you could add it up. The Irwin brothers. Wild Bill Irwin.
Yeah. Well, when you eventually went on now to the WWWF, you got to wrestle Bruno Sammartino in his heyday. What are some memories of those matches?
Yeah, Bruno called me. Or no, I called Bruno. And we set it up with the old man, Vince McMahon, Vince McMahon's dad. His name was Vince. The Vince that runs it now, everybody thinks that he was Vince Jr. He wasn't a junior. He didn't have the same middle name as his dad. But Bruno and I always called him Junior. Oh, he fucking hated it. He'd always tell people, don't call me Junior. But he couldn't tell us no because it wouldn't have any effect on us. Yeah, Junior, we won't call you Junior anymore.
I got to know what was a young Vince McMahon, Vincent Kennedy McMahon like? Because he's got almost mythological now, but you knew him as a young man, as the son of the promoter, as an announcer. What was he like as a young man?
Oh, he was great. Party time all the time. And, full of life, full of piss and vinegar, always wanting to go here and go there. He called me one day, wanted to go to Studio 54.
Okay.
That's the heyday of Studio 54.
Did you go with him?
He went with me because he couldn't get in.
You had the hookup, huh?
Yeah. One of the guys that worked the door, he was defensive back for my brother at the Seattle Seahawks. So I took my wife and we took the Grand Wizard, Ernie Roth. And so the four of us just walked right in the front door. The fucking line was only wrapped around the block and like 5, 6, 7, 8 deep. There had to be 3,000-4,000 people waiting to get in.
Wow.
And once we got in, I mean, we didn't wait. We just went right up to the door and I talked to the guy. And he says, Ken, he says, yeah, I hate to do this to you, but it's a private party tonight. And I said, all these people wrapped around the block, did they know that? Because they weren't getting in. You know, it was a private party. He says, well, I still have to charge you $50 a head. Which I know what he was doing. He just put it right in his pocket, you know, because everything was already paid for. And, so we go in, And I can't remember if it was my wife or Vince asked me if I wanted a drink. I said, yeah. And I said, I'll get them. Don't worry about it. So I went over to the bar. I ordered scotch and water. And I think Vince wanted a beer. Ernie, I don't know what Ernie wanted, a glass of wine or something. And my wife wanted whatever she was drinking, you know. So it was, I can't remember how much it was. $6 a drink? You know, back almost 40 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, now yeah. That's cheap. But back then, wow.
Well, it'd be $25-$30 a drink now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but this is the kicker. The scotch and water, they'd fill that fucking glass almost to the brim. It was a big glass, like schooners. They're like 12-ounce glasses. They'd fill it up with ice and fill it up with scotch with a sprinkle of water. There had to be 4 or 5 ounces of booze in there. And I says, holy shit. Anyway, I think I drank 5 or 6 of them.
You had a good night then.
Oh, yeah, I was fucking totally trashed. And so we're standing out there alongside the dance floor. We're stumbling around, and Vince wanted to dance, so he asked my wife, you know, so she jumped out there on the dance floor with him, and they were doing the boogie-woogie. And so, yeah, we had a hell of a time that night. We were there, shit. We must have been there for 3-4 hours. Yeah, Vince back in those days, great guy to run around with. I used to drive, or he would drive. We'd go up and down from New York to Bangor, Maine, Portland, Maine, all the way down to Washington, Baltimore, and all over the place. New Haven, Connecticut. Yeah, New Haven, Connecticut was the first time I body slammed Andre. Yeah, the place was sold out, so Andre and I were the main event. So Andre says, hey, boss, you want to slam me tonight? I says, no. He said, go ahead. So we were, you know, screwing around in there. And all of a sudden, I jerked him off the floor or off the ring, and up he goes. And that was the first time my body slammed. I body slammed about 8 or 9 times after that.
And that was a big deal, like, for him to kind of come up to you and say, do you want to body slam me? That's like a...
it's huge. Well, because he trusted me.
Right.
Yeah, he trusted me. He didn't trust any of those other guys. Yeah, Christ, he weighed 500 pounds.
Now, of course, you got to feud, and we'll talk about that a little bit, with Andre in the WWF later as part of the Heenan family. But before that, you were part of the Heenan family in AWA. And at that point in time, Kennedy McMahon started getting guys from the AWA. Slowly but surely, guys would start showing up in the WWF. What was it like during those days when it was apparent that Vern may be in over his head and Vince was out to win the thing?
But I had already worked in the WWF 2 or 3 times. You know, back in those days, you'd go work for a promoter for a year, year and a half. You know, if you're lucky, you'd stay 2 years and then you moved on, because there was a lot of promotions around the country. You know, you had Ganya here in Minnesota, you had Crockett's down in Charlotte, you had Von Erich down in Texas.
What would you say were what were some of the big differences between working for Vince Jr. and Vince Sr.?
Oh, well, you worked for Vince Sr. He was a diplomat. He worked right out of his shirt pocket. He didn't have any lawyers or, you know, accountants running after him and stuff. He had a pencil and paper, kept it in his shirt pocket. And when a wrestler would agree with him on how long they would stay and whatnot. You know, that was his word. You could trust the guy. If you came in Christmas Day, well, let's put it this way. In 1980, I came in New Year's Day and left 3 days after Christmas. Yeah, so it's almost a year. But that's what I wanted to do, and that's what he wanted me to do. So there's, you know, no contract to fuck around with, you know. And so, you know, he gave you his word. That his word was his bond, and that's how things were. Yeah, back in those days. And then when the kid, after he passed away, he died of colon cancer. And that was in, what, 84? 84, I believe it was. And then the kid, he took over. And slowly but surely, he got the big head. Yeah, he was going to put everybody out of business, which he eventually did. Didn't take him very long either. And put everybody else out of business. And so he was king of the road there, you know, so to speak. And everybody signed contract. You know, I never signed a contract with him. Wow. I was the only one never to sign a contract. Maybe that's why I didn't let... stay that long. I only stayed for a couple of years. Yeah, but once he took over, I went back there in 86. Yeah. June, I think, of 86, and then 87, and 88. I finished up Survivor Series 88. That's November. So a little over 2 years.
And throughout your career, throughout your career, you were a part of Bobby the Brain Heenan's stable at one point. What memories do you have working with Bobby?
Well, I always liked Bobby, but Bobby and I traveled all over the world. Yeah, but we had a good time. You know, he was able to get in and perform. You know, he didn't just sit on the sidelines and, you know, run up and down the apron and stuff like that. He actually got in and, you know, worked matches, you know, the singles matches, you know. And I don't know if you guys remember those singles matches that Bobby had with Greg Gagne.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
In the weasel suit.
Yep.
Oh, that was a hot item.
The best was him waking up. When he used to wake up in the weasel suit and would spin around, that was the funniest thing ever.
Yeah. 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 He was great. You know, the hell of a bumper too. Take great bumps. And he earned every fucking nickel he ever made.
Heenan was amazing behind the mic. He was amazing in the ring. And he managed you in the AWA as well as the WWF. And that's when I first became aware of you was when watching Andre the Giant just completely throttle you, because there was an angle where you and Big John Studd and Heenan cut Andre's hair. And then there was a match I remember like it was yesterday of Andre just throwing you around the ring like nothing you've ever seen as his revenge. What memories do you have of that match? Do you is that kind of one of the biggest moments in your career?
Oh, I think you're thinking of when he was throwing Hulk Hogan around the ring like a rag doll. He never did that with me.
Never.
I could be mistaken, but I don't think we ever had a match like that.
And
yeah, every match I ever had with Andre that I remember was all give and take, you know.
But with that haircut angle, with you when you guys cut Andre's hair, that was a huge angle, right? That was a huge, like, people.
Oh, it was
really
huge. Oh, that fucking thing was unbelievable. We sold out literally everywhere we went. And everywhere. And with turn away crowds.
And the thing that followed that up was WrestleMania 1. And
I was in jail.
Was that a separate incident, or was that the McDonald's incident that kept you out of WrestleMania 1?
McDonald's. That happened in 84. over in a little town north of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Now, as someone...
Yeah, that was a fuck job.
Totally. You know, and I've read a lot about it, and I can see that, and it took years, you know, it took years off your career, and it took, you know, it's a thing that people still talk about this very day. Is there anything that you want to clear up about that infamous McDonald's incident in 84?
No, I don't talk about it.
That's totally understandable. So yeah. how long?
No, it was bullshit, railroad job. It was a fuck job. You know, the fucking judge and DA over there. In Wisconsin, you know, they made Saito and I out to be, you know, a couple Martians that came to Earth to beat up their stupid police department. But that's enough of that.
For sure, for sure. How long you were out of wrestling until 87? And
I was out for 2 years.
And then they really celebrated your return by having vignettes on TV and made a video called The Ken Patera Story. You looked great. You weren't dyeing your hair anymore. You had a different look. What was your outlook then when you came back as a face, as a good guy, to take on your former teammates in the Heenan family?
Well, everything about the business had changed.
Hey guys, we know we have a lot of male listeners, and for those guys, do you remember the days that you were always ready to go?
Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. So listen up, it's bluechew.com, and guys, that is blue like the color blue.
It's a crazy thing, it's a chewable, and it's available from bluechew.com. And it's got the same FDA-approved active ingredients that you find in Viagra and Cialis. You know they work. And like I said, it's a easy-to-take chewable.
Yeah, you can take it anytime. You can take it a day. You can take it at night, full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Because let me just tell you something. An opportunity could arise at any time.
Well, for almost everybody except me. But let me tell you this. If it did, if in fact it
That's
did,
true.
You know, all I got to do is go online, because Blue Chew is prescribed online. And it ships right to the door in a discreet package. You know, so there's no like in-person doctor visit. You don't have to be embarrassed or have that awkwardness waiting in the pharmacy. And it's a much easier way to kind of be always ready on the go.
And we all know, Matt, that you probably have had that awkward waiting in the pharmacy visit before. But nonetheless, Blue Chews are made in the USA. And since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they are cheaper than a pharmacy, which works out really good for your pocket.
You know, and it's... Guys, this is a no-brainer. You know, if you've always kind of considered something, you know, to help you in this way, you know, Blue Chew is the way to go. You go to bluechew.com and get your first shipment. Guess how much it is, Robbie?
How much is
it? It is free. It is free when you use our special promo code, Robbie. All you got to do is pay a measly $5 shipping for a free shipment of Blue Chew.
And that special promo code Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E. And notice how they made the code after my name and not Matt's.
Well, they actually want people to buy it. And don't, and don't just take our word for it. I know many people who have used it, and they love the Blue Chew. Again, that's Blue Chew, BLUECHEW.com. Promo code Robbie to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And man, we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast and being supporters of Why It Ended. And make sure to go to bluechew.com. What's the promo code again?
R-O-B-B-I-E, Robbie.
It's amazing. He has to spell out his own name. Try it today. Bluechew.com, promo code Robbie.
I'm a college graduate.
Literally everything. I didn't even recognize it.
Just in those 2 years? Wow.
In 2 years. Vince had turned the whole thing upside down. Everybody had to read a script. Prior to that, you know, everybody do their own interviews. And he took everybody's character away, basically. And I just, I said, fuck this. I said, you know, I'm going to come in here and read a script. And I did for about 6 months. And after that, you know, I just got fed up with it.
It just wasn't for you.
And no, because the angles all changed. The attitudes all changed, you know, and then Vince starts the drug testing as if he's going to solve the problems of the world. You know, but, well, number one, Hulk Hogan would never take a drug test. So what does that tell you?
Was that common knowledge?
Of course, he never tested Andre.
Was that common knowledge that all the other guys were being tested, but Hogan and Andre and a couple others were treated differently as far as the testing went?
I think so. I mean, Hogan told me himself, I'm not going to take no fucking piss test. Fuck that. You know.
But it kind of, feeds the point that, you know, drugs were a big part of the scene back then. How big of a problem
Huge.
Was it, though? Was it a big problem, or was it just part of the scene?
No, it was a problem. It was out of control. Yeah, I told you.
Do you think it was just wrestling, or you think it was the times? And back then, everybody kind of...
It was the times.
Yeah.
It was the times. The baseball team there in Pittsburgh, the Pirates... The Pittsburgh Pirates?
They were as big as houses.
They couldn't even field a team without all coked up.
Yeah, yeah.
That whole fucking team was on drugs. Yeah, so when they finally got busted for that, then they realized the National League and the American League. Everybody was fucked up.
So I was going to say, when you said when you went back to the WWF, everything was so different in those 2 years. Was Vince himself different, or was he still the same to you?
No, he had changed a lot, too. Yeah, some guys, like Buddy Rose and Piper and Neidhart, probably the worst was Adonis, Adrian Adonis. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Oh, and Buddy Rose, those two were completely out of control. And Neidhart was bad. I heard Jimmy Neidhart passed away a couple weeks ago. God damn, I like that guy. Yeah, first time I met him, he started telling me about when he was at UCLA. He's a shot putter on the track and field team there at UCLA. And he said the first thing his coach told him, he said, I want you to come in the film room and watch pitchers and or come in and watch action clips of Ken Patera when he was throwing the shot back in college.
There you go.
Because, you know, we had basically the same body type and stuff, same height and whatnot. And so Jimmy said he had to watch tapes of me, hours and hours of them. I said, really? He said, yeah, but I enjoyed it. I really did. So he put me over like $1 million.
So,
and he said, he said his coach wanted me to him to copy my technique and stuff. I says, well, shit, that took, that must have set you back a while. that horrible technique.
The scene back then when you returned was kind of crazy, crazy behind the scenes, lots of stuff going on. And, you kind of felt out of place, had an injury, to your arm, and then you were tagged a little bit with Billy Jack Haynes. It seems like a great tag team on paper, but it didn't really last very long. What are your thoughts on Billy Jack Haynes?
Well, Billy Jack had problems. I mean, a lot of problems. personal problems, drug problems. I mean, he was really, really fucked up. And I thought he was going to die one night. We were wrestling out there, and Oakland, California, the Coliseum, completely sold out. And he didn't even show up. So they put Hillbilly Jim was my partner. And, then I come back, and there's Billy. He said that he missed his flight and had to catch another flight. So he was laying on a couch just sweating. I mean, he was sweating like a hose. And so I told just an employee of the Coliseum there, I said, "Do you have any orange juice here?" No. I said, "Do you have a kitchen, or do you have something to get orange juice?" "Oh, yeah, I know where some orange juice is." I said, "Will you go get a couple quarts of orange juice?" And so the guy, I couldn't believe it, he was back in like 3-4 minutes. And then Billy's laying there in the fucking couch. I thought he was going to die. And the electrolytes were way down. And so I made him drink like a quart and a half of orange juice, and he finally snapped out of it. And, he was just really fucked up. I felt sorry for him.
That's crazy, I mean, man.
He was taking everything under the...
And, I mean, you want to talk about a body guy. Like, Billy Jack Haynes was one of the big body guys of the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we both grew up in Portland, Oregon.
Your final days with WWF, you were wrestling a lot of like the mid-card guys. You were having a lot of losses. Is that kind of what led you to say maybe it was time for you to go?
Well, there were losses because I wanted to lose you, knucklehead. What the fuck? I was on my way out. I said, fuck. But for me to beat anybody the last 6, 7, 8 months didn't make any sense to me.
Well, you're a hell of a nice guy. The times have changed in wrestling, let me tell you.
Oh, I know. All these guys, a bunch of prima donnas, they're all legends in their own brain.
Robbie.
You know, that's how brainless they are. They're fucking brain dead. I told Vince, I say, he asked me if I could put some guys over. I said, "Vince, I don't want to win another match for as long as I'm here. How's that?" "Well, can you put Bad News Brown over? Can you put the Big Boss Man over? Can you put King Kong Bundy over?" And I said, "Fuck, line them up." and that's what that was. Yeah, that was by design. Yeah,
so shit. What was the conversation you had with Vince before that when you told him you were done, you wanted to leave? Obviously, he knew at that point. So what was that conversation like?
Yeah. Well, that night that Billy Jack, I thought he was going to die out there at the Oakland Coliseum in California there. The next day we had TV. And so I walked in. I flew in, took a cab over to the building, walked in. As I was walking down the hall to the locker rooms, I walked by the room. I catch Vince out of the corner of my eye. So I took 2 steps back, turned to my left, walked in the fucking room. "Vince." "Yeah, Ken, how you doing, man?" I said, "Well, let's have a conversation." I said, "We can have a conversation. I can put my bag down. If you don't want to have a conversation, I'll just keep my bag. I'll turn around and leave and go to the airport right now. How's that?" "Oh, no, don't do that. You know, just put your bag down. You know, have a seat. We'll talk about things." I told him, I said, "Vince, you've been treating me like a fucking liability the last 4 or 5 months. I'm sick and tired of it." I said, "I still consider myself an asset to this company, but you have some goofy idea that I'm a liability. Pat Patterson told me a couple weeks ago that you couldn't rely on me because I got injured too often. And I said I had a couple freak fucking accidents. And after I paid my hotels every night, my rent-a-car, my meals, I got a check in the mail for a minus $50 for that.
Wow.
And you thought, hey, you can't make shit up like this. I swear to God, it's a minus $50. Because every night I had to take a $200 draw to pay for my hotel, my rent-a-car, my meals, you know, gas and everything. And I said, oh, hey, Jesus Christ, you know. And so the way he found out about it, I had called the accountant that worked for him in the WWF in the corporate offices. And I just fucking read him up one side down. I said, how in the fuck do you expect me or anybody to drive around 1,400 fucking miles, 7 days on the road, and get a check for a minus $50? Anyway, it's quite obvious he didn't have an answer for me.
So how much would you expect to be paid on a per match basis during that time? It sounds like it was very little money considering the work you were doing.
Oh, yeah. It was like $150 to $300. A match is, but they had me in little shit towns. Some of those towns, you didn't even have 300 people in them. In the building.
Were you the only one that got the negative 50, or did a lot of guys?
Oh, you'd have to ask them. I think most of them are dead now. But Buddy Rose and Dynamite Kid and David Boy Smith, all those guys. Yeah. Everybody was treated the same. Shit. Like
back then, some of those guys that the names you just listed are known as, you know, some really tough guys when you think about wrestling history and stuff. What did you guys all get along? Was there ever problems in or outside of the ring, you know, competition to see who was the top or anything like that?
No. With Manson, no, I got along with everybody. I never had a problem with anybody.
Who was the toughest guy in the locker room? Like, you know, we hear all these stories about, you know, it was a different time back then, and you really had to carry it outside the ring and inside the ring. Who was the guy you didn't want to mess with?
That's a tough question. You never know how tough somebody is until you fight them.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was. But no, I got along with everybody, so I couldn't really tell you who the tough guys were. You know, there were plenty of tough guys.
With that, you know, you were out of the WWE. Looking at your WWE years, you know, of course, that's where I know you from, and a lot of fans who, at that time, wrestling exploded, you know, in popularity. What is your greatest memory from your WWF years?
Well, we were staying at the Abraham Lincoln Motor Inn. I think that was in Reading, Pennsylvania. And that's that was back in the day that we drove our own vehicles. And I had my Olympic ring, my marriage ring, and a little pinky ring shaped like a horseshoe, all diamonds. Rolex watch, couple gold chains. And so when I pulled into the Abraham Motor Inn, I drove up, I think, the second or third floor of the parking ramp. And I had put that jewelry underneath the floor mat on the driver's side. But I did that prior to the match that night, because there was a couple thieves in the locker room, and I didn't know exactly who they were, but I was told. So when I got to the hotel, I forgot that my jewelry was underneath the floor mat. And then I forgot to lock the fucking car. So I get out, reach in the back, grab my duffel bag, and go in the hotel, check in and everything. Come out the next morning and to get in the car. And then I said, well, fuck, I'll grab the jewelry. Lift up the floor mat. All the jewelry was gone. I said, what the fuck? What the hell? I said, I know I left it here. I was a daydream and I wasn't even drinking. Anyway, I go back in the hotel, inside the hotel, and I start asking the girl behind the counter if there was any robberies last night that anybody could say, oh yeah, there were a couple prostitutes running around the hotel here.
Oh boy.
Yeah, stealing stuff and whatnot. So they called the cops on them, but they got away with some guy just before the cops got there. I says, well, they fucking hit my car. I forgot to lock my car last night, and I put all my jewelry underneath my floor mat. And I told them what it was, you know, my Olympic ring and wedding ring and all that, Rolex watch and everything. Believe it or not, about a month later, or no, it wasn't even that. It was about 2 weeks later. They caught the ding dong, their pimp. They caught the girls too. And because somebody must have seen them in the lobby or, you know, fucking around in the hotel, whatever. And they recovered all my jewelry except the Rolex watch. I said, fuck. And I took that Rolex back in those days. Shit. That was in the mid-70s. I think I paid almost $6,000 for that fucking watch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, back then. Because that would be like a $30,000 watch nowadays. Yeah, so I said, oh, fuck, that's it. And that was one of the high spots of me being in the WWF. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I tell you about the girls that would hang around. People say, well, God, you must have had a lot of girls, huh? And I says, every town, they'd all be at the back door of the arena or Coliseum, whatever you were wrestling at. They always knew where the boys went in. And so when you'd come out after the matches, more than not, they were there. You know, you just take the pick of the prettiest one you wanted, and away you go. And if there weren't any pretty ones outside the arena after the matches, you go to the hotel, and there's three times more there.
Matt, you have that same problem when you leave work, right? They're just waiting for you at your car?
Every single day. Same thing.
Now?
No.
I'm a 74. I'm going to be 75 years old in 3 weeks, asshole. I'm an invalid. I don't fuck around anymore.
Well, after you,
I don't think I could. When you
hey, hey, well, we got this great sponsor, Ken, that can help you out. But so when you eventually left WWF, you went back to AWA, and that was when it was kind of fading out. What was that scene like?
Oh, that was a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, it was the end, right?
Yeah, Vern was lost. Totally. He'd walk around the hallways of his office like he was in a trance and still thinking that he was heavyweight champion. I'm not kidding. And he had Ray Stevens and Wahoo McDaniel doing the booking. And so they'd do all the matches. But he only had like two shows a week on average. I don't think they did more than 8 or 10 shows a month. And so, which is, I mean, what, 120 shows a year? Yeah, so there was no money. Nobody was making any money. Vern didn't have any money. He was completely broke. And he was getting ready to file for bankruptcy. He held off as long as he could. And I think finally the next year, maybe in it had to be that he didn't last till 91. Fuck. And so anyway, whatever Wahoo and Ray did, Vern come in and change everything. Every fucking day, prior to the show, that's what Vern did. He come in and change everything. And so Ray would look at Wahoo, and Wahoo would look at Ray and say, what the fuck are we doing here?
Now, looking back on it, do you think that maybe he was showing like early signs of kind of losing his mental faculties a little bit, because we know he struggled with dementia.
Oh yeah, dementia, Alzheimer's. Yeah, oh yeah.
So that was happening then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, back in the late 80s. Yeah, 89, 90. Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. You know, some people, like my mother. She lived to almost turned 90. But from about 86, 87, she started to get a little goofy. And it only lasted another 3 years.
Right.
But Vern, he definitely had things going on that weren't right.
It was a very sad end to what was once a proud promotion.
Yeah, the best promotion in the country for several years, probably 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 years. Everybody wanted to wrestle for Vern. Yeah.
Now, of course, that was pretty much it for the AWA, and it brought kind of your career to a close. But I do want to ask one question that I'm seeing here, and I just got to find out. You made an appearance at the Insane Clown Posse's Juggalo Championships Wrestling, facing Bob Backlund.
Where now?
It was Juggalo Championship Wrestling facing Bob Backlund in 2011.
Oh, down there in Southern Illinois.
That would be it. Yeah. That must have been a crazy scene there.
Yeah, it goes 24/7 for, I don't know how many days does that thing go on?
Oh, I don't know.
Probably like a week or something.
Yeah, at least a week, I heard. Yeah. Yeah, so Bobby and I were supposed to go on like 9 o'clock.
When you go 3 a.m.?
We went on like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, I've heard that before.
We were all, intense there. At least it was warm out. Yeah, I looked at Bobby and he looked at me. I said, Bobby. And he got me to come down there, And I said, Bobby, what'd you get me into? He said, I don't know. He says, I'm sorry. I said, don't apologize. Oh, no. It wasn't Bobby. He got me to come to a couple other deals after that. It was Buck Robley. You guys know Buck Robley?
I'm not sure I do.
I don't.
Yeah, he was a booker for Cowboy Bill Watts in the day.
So he's telling you there's this great gig in Southern, Illinois, and you're going to wrestle Bob Backlund.
So Bobby called me and says, Ken, I hear that they want us to relive that 1980 match we had in Madison Square Garden, voted a number one match of the year that year. I said, there's nothing wrong with you, Bobby, but I'm way overweight. I need a knee surgery. I needed my left knee replaced, which I had done a couple months after that. But I said, fuck. They wanted me to bleach my hair. Can you imagine that? They wanted me to bleach my fucking hair. And I said, fuck you. I'm not going to bleach my goddamn hair for a stupid fuck. I said, my hair is gray anyway. What, you know, I tell you, that was the biggest farce. So, you know, I dig out my wrestling gear I hadn't seen in 20 years. But lucky I always use that spandex stuff. So just slipped off pretty easy. My wrestling boots still fit fine. And oh, yeah, what a fiasco that was. But we had a pretty good match for what it was. You know, here I'm 70 years old.
It's 3 o'clock Bobby, in the morning.
Yeah, but Bobby was probably, let's see, about, he's got to be 5 years younger than me. He's got to be Ric Flair's age, I think, around 69, whatever. But anyway, yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning, and luckily I got a 12-pack of Miller Lite before we got to that thing. Yeah, so about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, whatever it was, I fucking cracked that open, started having a few beers, and I think I drank all 12 beers by 3 o'clock.
Before your match.
And,
yeah, you had nothing else to do, right?
Yeah, and then we had to go on. The show must go on. I mean, fuck. I'm out there, you know, so I tell Bobby, I said, Bobby, you call the match. Yeah, I guess we fucked around for 7-8 minutes. And I forgot 2 or 3 spots, but Bobby covered them up, you know. And so, you know, people got a kick out of it. I got a kick out of it, tell you the truth.
Well, that's awesome, man. And it was awesome having you on. We really appreciate you taking the time and talking to us. Is there, do you take like bookings for autograph signings or anything if someone wants to book you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, what is the best way? You know, a lot of people listen to this. You know, if someone wanted to reach out to contact you to book you for a convention or something, how would they go about it?
Well, I'll give you my, well, just give them my phone number.
Got it. Okay, but you don't have an email or anything to give out?
Boy, I'm kind of hesitant on that. I'll tell you why, because the email, that's my business. I do all my business on there.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
And several years ago, I gave out my email. Well, shit. One weekend, I had like 100 fucking emails, you know, clogging up my, and then I have to go in there and delete them all. Right. And it's just a pain in the ass. So I stopped giving my email out. I guess anybody could, but there are places you can go get a person's email, I guess, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're interested in booking Mr. Patera, just reach out to us and we can pass along the information to him. And
you're telling me this fucking interview's over?
it's
not a bunch of assholes. You call me and we're just getting ready to finally get to know one another, and you cut me off and tell me to go fly a kite.
Oh, we'd never do that.
Jesus Christ.
That's got to get to the
truth. Holy shit.
Thank you very much for being on here. It's an honor for me, you know, as a fan. Robbie's a wrestler, but I'm a fan, and as a lifelong fan, I've watched you for many years, and I always thought you were just great, and I really wish you the best, and thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, give me some bookings. I want to get out of Minnesota here for a while. I haven't done any personal appearance. I did 5 last year. I've only done 2 this year, so I'm ready to get the fuck out of Dodge.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we'll definitely spread the word.
Well, Robbie, I think sometimes when we interview these guys, we don't know quite what we're going to get, and we got all we wanted and more from the world's strongest man, Ken Patera.
Did he just say that at 70 years old he was wrestling at the Insane Clown Posse like festival thing?
Oh yeah, he was drinking Faygo. He was
12 beers deep having a match at 3 a.m. with Bobby Heenan. Good God.
Bob Backlund.
Oh, sorry, Bob Backlund.
Yeah, there's a difference. but I just thought, what a fantastic interview. What a good. What do you think about who he broke in with? The Iron Sheik and Ric Flair and them just doing squats in this 100 degree barn for hours on end. That's a whole different scene, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I wish it was still like that, because that's what, you know, weeded out the people that didn't belong in pro wrestling. You know, to get through that kind of training, you had to really want it and you had to be really tough. And, you know, a lot of guys now don't really want it and they're not that tough. So it is what it is. But it sounds like it was awesome. And then after that, who do you say, Steamboat came out of there, and there was someone else, he said.
Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter. And
that's it, Slaughter. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable talent.
And I think we could use that kind of, filtering mechanism now, because from what I can tell, the way they tell if wrestlers are tough now is they have Honey Boo Boo chop them.
You know what? I can't believe you're still making an attempt to be the funny guy on this podcast, Matt. Like, no one, out of our thousands and thousands of listeners, no one's laughing at that joke, are they?
I'm not sure. We can put up a poll topic, but I'll tell you what people aren't laughing at is the fact that our Patreon is all caught up and we are putting up bonus stuff every single week. Get episodes early, get bonus episodes, get all kinds of cool extras over at patreon.com/whyitended. Of course, if you want to listen on iTunes and subscribe, give us a 5-star review. If you're the kind of person who wants to listen to a podcast on YouTube, we know you're out there. You can check us out at whereitended.com.
And then, of course, Twitter, Why It Ended, Instagram, Why It Ended.
So, Robbie, this weekend, you up to anything? You going to wrestle Kourtney Kardashian, or are you going to, like, you know, fight well, Judge Judy, or what's going on?
Yeah, hey, we got to make a weekly thing. So, you know, I've already been on for like 6 or 7 times, but now I want to do it every week. But now you can catch me in Gloucester, I think that's how you pronounce it, Massachusetts, Friday night for OCW. And then I was so funny, man. And then Saturday morning, here's another good one. Saturday morning, I'm flying into Milwaukee, but for Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, for a show and a seminar, FTW, whatever that city is. And then a Sunday for my buddy Dave Hero. He's friends with a wrestling school. I'm doing a seminar there Sunday afternoon, which means Saturday afternoon I get to work out at my favorite gym in Milwaukee, Sweeney's Gym, that my buddy owns.
Now, what was the first town you're going to again?
The first one was Gloucester, and the second one was Fond du Lac.
I like the first one. It's good. Make sure you check Robbie out on the road. He is wrestling everybody, whether it be Scott Steiner, Abyss, Honey Boo Boo, whoever. And make sure you listen to us on
Why
It
and Did.
That was weird. It's over. The gimmick's over. We need a new one. All right, guys. See you next week.